Hi, this is Circe Olson-Wessner, the director of the Museum of the American Military Family, and this is our podcast, Together We Serve. I'm joined today by Anne Montague, who is the executive director and founder of the American Rosie Movement. I'm sure we're going to learn a lot about the American Rosie Movement, ARM, and about the thousands of Rosie the Riveters out there. Welcome, Anne.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's my pleasure. So I read your bio, and it says that during World War II, your mother, Jessie Jacobs, was a Rosie. And the day after World War II ended, you made a promise to your mother and grandmother, which you try to live up to this day. And so what promise did you make at age six that has carried you through till now?
Well, that day was my very, very first day of school. There was no preschool at that time. And my grandmother took me to the gate, and I had to walk by myself about 2-3 blocks to school, big girl. And she said to me, "You are so lucky. You're going to grow up in a free world, and women will have more opportunity than they've ever had before. And it's your responsibility to use your freedom wisely." And I never forgot it. And I still use that phrase today.
Wow. You know, I don't recall having ever interviewed someone who has started a movement. So that's really cool. And your movement's been around for about 14 years. And so that shows commitment and relevance on your part. Can you tell our listeners what is the American Rosie Movement?
Well, the American Rosie Movement is the highlighting the women who worked in World War II, primarily to show that we can pull together. Through the war and through all the interviews that I've done about the war, the women tell me that the most important thing to them and how they want to be remembered is they pulled together then, and we can do it again. So the Rosie the Riveter Movement, or American Rosie Movement, is to not only find the women and get their histories, that is history and very important history, but also get the public involved in doing projects, or doing project could be music, or it could be build a park or whatever, that leave a lasting record of the Rosies. So it's very, very important that the public be involved, and the public knows that individuals in this country can take action themselves rather than just having to wait for representative government.
Okay, so you know, I think you've sort of answered my next question, but I want to restate it. I think that most of our listeners have heard of Rosie the Riveter. Certainly they've seen a poster or two featuring a picture of a Rosie. Why do you think Rosies are so important, and why should we be remembering their legacy?
Well, there's so many reasons. First of all, I think it's very, very much time in the women's movement to recognize these women. Through the women's movement in the 70s or thereabouts, I think the women were very much wanting to move forward, and that to go backwards was backward. But I do not believe that. I believe that it was their mothers who won the freedom to essentially get women in the workforce and so forth. So it's very important to involve the Rosies and to know about what the Rosies did. Most important to me is that the Rosies will very often tell you that they do not want to be highlighted or limelighted. They want to work in groups, and they want to be seen as essentially part of something bigger. So they have that sense of doing something bigger and having a small piece. And maybe it was only, a small assembly line job. But now they begin to recognize that with the small jobs, the big job was done. So that's a major reason. But there are many other ties to this, because the women, of course, their major goal was to bring the boys home. Mm-hmm. So it is not male bashing or saying that women are being ignored or whatever. They are, but the fact is, or we are, but the fact is that I believe that we will make much more strides in the women's movement by showing what we can accomplish to pull people together. So it isn't just focusing on education and or essentially the buzzwords, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I'm not making light of that, but I'm saying that when the women's movement often will essentially take the tactic of we deserve more, and women do by all means. The fact is, however, that the way they will be seen as doing more is by essentially leading a movement that has to do with productivity. So every project is a sense of productivity.
So that, I guess that explains why you chose a movement and not just a museum or a monument.
But, exactly right.
Yeah.
The issue with monuments and museums is that you have to, the public has to go there. The issue with the American Rosary Movement is the public is involved no matter where you are. So we're asking all of America to ask any Rosie that, or any woman they know above 93 years old, what did you do in World War II? That just gets us the Rosies and gets them interviewed. But the most important thing is that projects are being done all over America that are very creative and very exciting to the people who are involved. So it is a way of involving the public that museums and monuments don't do.
Okay. So I think it sounds like the American Rosie movement is different from other social movements because it involves people on multiple levels doing multiple things. So is that how ARM differs from other social movements?
Well, there's several ways. One is that we are following the models of old women, and therefore, essentially, we are breaking the mold, if you will, and we're saying that you don't have to be a charismatic, powerful person to be a leader. You can be essentially an old lady who's got some very kind memories of her family and her country, mm-hmm. and she knows how to get things done. Many of these women are surprisingly interesting and very, very much oriented toward getting things done. They like to get things done. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty consistent characteristic. But another way that they differ is that most social movements focus on one population, like gays or women or disabled persons or persons of color or whatever. And the population we serve is all America. So it is a movement that is different because it's inclusive of all people.
Okay. So I imagine you've been very successful to have been around for 14 years. Can you tell some of the projects you've done as part of the ARM movement?
Yeah, actually, let me sort through what's... tell you a very early one that I have very, very fond memories of. Early on, I think it was 2010, when we were making a documentary film, we decided we had about maybe 25 roses at that point. And we decided to make a park. And so we just went to an existing park because they would do the maintenance. And we wouldn't have to worry about the maintenance after the park was built. So they chose a very ordinary park. It's called Roadside Park. And they had quite an adventure in getting the piece of that land within the park that they wanted. So we're going to be writing a short story about that, and hopefully it will turn into a movie at some point. But those women then really stood up to the powers that be they got the land that they wanted. It's beautiful land along the Kanawha River in St. Albans, West Virginia. And then they planned out everything that was to be done in that park, including an archway between two trees and an oval. They chose the oval because the oval represents democracy, such as in the Oval Office.
Mm.
And of course, they planted the first tree there, and they chose as the tree to represent them, the dogwood tree. And that's for good reason. For one thing, it's beautiful and it endures, and that's the way they like to think of themselves. In any event, that's one example, and we're waiting now for other locations to say they want to build parks, and then we will essentially guide them to do that, at least with the meaning that we have. In the park, there's a monument that has the Rosie the Riveter icon on one side, and on the back side has a quote that I really love from mm-hmm. a Medal of Honor recipient, and he said, "We did it together." To me, that's so powerful. And that's from a veteran himself who did not even know about Rosie's and admitted to us very early on that he'd never thought about, you know, where did the tanks or the grenades or the ships come from?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that "we did it together" is just a wonderful phrase. So that's just one example, but we've done 18 different projects, art and music and naming interstate bridges, naming buildings.
Oh, cool.
Essentially we've invited two allied nations to come to thank American Rosie's for the first time. And after we did that, then the Embassy of the Netherlands started inviting us in, and we had two trips to the Netherlands with our Rosie's, and they were able to see firsthand the people that they were protecting that they had never even met. A Dutchman.
Wow.
So it was powerful. Really, it's been just a great adventure, really.
Well, so as a small museum doing collaborative work globally, sometimes people mix us up with other museums or other organizations out there. You know, they think we're something else than we are. Does that happen to the American Rosie movement?
It does, very consistently, and we've struggled with that. We finally decided to go ahead and trademark the American Rosie movement. Not that that makes it that much easier for the public, but at least it is our name. One thing that we noticed very consistently is that people will look up the information that we have or look us up on the internet, and there will be as many as 10 or 15 different organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And it is hard to distinguish us.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we're considering right now is to essentially create a very different logo. The iconic logo of the woman with her arm in the air, which was made in Pittsburgh,
mm-hmm.
Is in the public domain. Therefore, it's used constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And it is easily recognizable.
Mm-hmm.
But we're now working on trying to find an artist who will individualize it enough that it's recognized as the American Rosie Movement.
Cool. Yeah. So, you know, that brings up to mind, you know, you said that the Rosie picture is in the public domain. And a couple of years ago, I saw a Rosie the Riveter-like poster being used for, I think it was a Women's March event. So I can see how your movement intersects with all sorts of equality work, you know, maybe with even the Library of Congress oral history projects and in education and in women's equality work. Where else are intersections with your movements and projects, you know, out there? Where else can people...
It's a wonderful question, but it's a list that goes on. Let me give you four examples and I'll stop at that because it does intersect with so many different organizations, interest groups, even locations.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that we love to do is work with youth. So we've worked with Girl Scouts significantly. And we even have a Girl Scout troop that have made their own patch, and lots of Girl Scout troops have planted dogwood trees, et cetera, et cetera. So youth are very important. We have a buzz phrase that's every project should be SASSY, S-A-S-S-Y, and that means sustainable, mm-hmm. achievable, mm-hmm. a simple statement about who the Rosies are and what they mean. Mm-hmm. And involve youth. So youth is a big one. Another one that we have found is very exciting and unexpected is the military groups that essentially are retired military persons. It would include American Legion and the VFW. But it's very often just local military groups that just love this project, and they feel so enlightened. And that delights me, because the men are very open to exploring that they had not even realized until they heard about our work and other Rosie work, that it was the women who made a huge difference. Now, there were as many women working on the home front as there were men in the military. That's quite a surprise. Mm. Another group that I love very much is the arts. Mm. So we have two original songs that we've copyrighted. Mm-hmm. And one of them was performed by the Philadelphia Girls Choir. And young people really like this song. It's very spirited, and we need actually a high school band somewhere to perform it, because I wrote it as a high school band, and I don't know where middle C is on the piano, but but I somehow came up with it. So the arts are so important. I really believe that the arts are what's going to push this thing forward. As soon as people start realizing that it will be plays and movies and music and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. that will essentially live on more. And that, and there, you don't have to go to one place. You know, music and the arts are just very, very communicatable.
So where can they hear the two songs? Are they on the internet?
They're on our website, AmericanRosieMovement.org.
Okay.
And let me give you the words. I won't try to sing.
Okay.
It's so simple. Allow us to tell you, it's plain and simple. Rosie, we want to say thanks. From our American spirit, we want you to hear it. In unity, we say thanks. Now, you've got a brave heart served with a good start, and you got a ribbon and Rosie smile. You served in D.C., Hawaii, Kentucky, all across America. Now we're lucky. Thank you, Rosie, with your riveting smile. Thank you, Rosie, with your riveting smile. And then at the end, everybody's supposed to put up their arm and smile.
Oh, cool. Well, definitely. I will put the website up in our link underneath the podcast, too. I'll put the link so people can go hear that. That's really cool. So over the years, you must have collected all sorts of recordings. I mean, obviously the ones that you've created, but recordings of Rosie's voices and artifacts, like interviews and photos and letters. Are there plans for preserving them, like putting them in a library?
Or? This is a very good question, and we're struggling with this, because we actually asked the Rosie the Riveter World War II Homefront Park in San Francisco or Richmond, California, if they wanted it, and we never heard back. But at the same time, I think that because we are so interactive with the public, mm-hmm. in other words, the public really has a major role in this. You know, they're going to be creating projects all over the country, and already are. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure that it really belongs in a museum. So we're still struggling with, you know, maybe it should be just a transportable museum that goes from place to place. We haven't figured that out yet. in 5 years, I would say that what I would love to see is that most cities in America have done at least one thing to honor the Rosies, and hopefully before their last Rosie dies. But of course, the Rosies are fading very fast. The youngest I know is 93.
Yeah. So you already mentioned this, but I understand that there are US and international cities that are embracing the Rosie movement. So which cities have been involved and what kind of things did they do? I know you mentioned a park and a song, but like what city and what was their project?
Well, let me tell you about just last Labor Day rather than go way back.
Mm-hmm.
We chose six cities that had done 5 years of work with us.
Uh-huh.
And one of them was Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
We got a hold of Muriel Bowser's office, and they essentially found, would you believe, six Rosies above 100 years old?
Wow.
Can you imagine?
Wow.
Can you imagine? And they're Cracker Jacks. They're really just special people.
Mm-hmm.
So we had already had an event at the National Cathedral. We'd already been at the carillon of the Embassy of the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
Because we ring a bell for Rosies across many countries on Labor Day.
Okay.
So the carillon was really important. We'd already done numerous projects in D.C. That last September 2nd, I think it was, I'm not sure, the city of Washington got together with the National Museum of Naval History.
Uh-huh.
And on a essentially naval base, we had an event. Now, it was COVID time, so the number of people able to attend was limited. But they had literally a red carpet for the ladies.
Aww.
And we had various really, really good speakers, honestly, you know, an admiral of that region and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that just, and it's consistently this way, the thing that essentially endeared people to the event was one woman was 105. She's been studied for years by, let's see, one of the hospitals there in DC, I'm not sure which one, over many, many decades, I think, but certainly many years. About aging.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so she's very, very bright.
Mm-hmm.
And so I asked her something like, well, now, what do you plan for the future? And mm-hmm. she said, I'm going to donate my brain to science.
Well, good for her.
The other woman was very, very different. That woman had been in a very rare environment with working at embassies and so forth in D.C. Mm. The other woman had literally picked cotton in Louisiana. Mm. So she was African-American mostly.
Mm.
And she was just so, I couldn't help but touch her on the back. I tried not to touch her, but I couldn't help, but I just loved her so. Anyway, she had just been done a clerical job of making sure that veterans got their checks. So she was one of many. And so I said to her afterwards, Hilda, you know, do you feel that your job was important? And she said, honey, every job is important.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, it was our message in the first place. There's a role for everybody in America, and every job's important. And even if people are shy or are never seen, mm-hmm. you know, if you do something for America to show that we can pull together, and that we don't have to wait for our representatives to do that, or elected officials or whatever.
So, what is the best thing about starting and leading a movement? And then, of course, what is the hardest thing about
it? Oh, my. I think the best.
A little bit of time. So.
I think the best thing about starting a movement is you know, it's the right thing to do. It's the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs to be done so badly that we do need to pull together. There are other reasons it needs to be done. In other words, the women need to be recognized. The work needs to be recognized as highest quality and all that. But the pulling together is what the women want to be remembered for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the legacy they want to leave. So I find every day I've got more to do than I can ever get done. But it's very exciting to know that bit by bit we're advancing on it. Mm-hmm. We really are advancing. Now, on the negative side, I haven't stopped to raise money because there's always something new. Like today, I had a deadline at 3:00 and we had computer problems and whatever. And, you know, it's just that to do the day-to-day work, consumes my time, and I haven't stopped to raise money. However, had I stopped to raise the money, I would have had somebody to do what I'm doing, right?
Right.
So, you know, I put myself in a essentially double bond. But the other thing that's kind of negative about it is that it's very frustrating that people really, I would say, a good 70% of Americans don't know what a Rosie the Riveter is.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then we're trying to explain not only who they are, but that the public should be involved and show different projects.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge amount of work we've done, and it's very, very hard to encapsulate it.
Right, right. Well, so how can our listeners help or join the American Rosie movement, and what kind of help do you need right now?
The most important thing that we want to accomplish this year is to get the public to help us find and get to know any Rosies who are out there. We have no idea if we're talking about 300 or 3,000 women. We do not know.
Mm-hmm.
There were a minimum of 6 million during that time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once that gets done, or while that's being done, we plant the seed that every community in America should do something to honor the Rosies, even if they don't still have one living. And it could be, you know, something small, like planting a dogwood tree with a plaque on it. Another project that's really fun and both adults and children like is to install bluebird nest boxes, because bluebirds represented hope in World War II. Many, many, many of the songs had to do with bluebirds, and it meant hope. And so we've got cities that have bluebird nest trails, and that gets the adults working with the children, because those have to be maintained. That is one of those projects that you just don't walk away from. But getting the public involved to find the Rosies and start thinking, you know, what is it I want to do in my community, or what is it I want to do as an individual on a national scale?
Mm-hmm.
And we can help. If people want to call, we can definitely help to guide them, depending on their interest and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's back to the problem. The major problem we have is that it's so inclusive and so big that you almost have to deal with the individual group or the individual location or even the individual,
mm-hmm.
In order to help them decide how does the shoe fit them.
Well, so this makes me think. So let's just say I know two women that worked in a factory in my hometown.
Right.
And so do I call your organization and say, hey, there are these two women, or do I go ahead and interview them as a person and send you a tape, or do
the
I?
The best thing to do is to let us give you the guidelines. In other words, you have to have permission from the woman if she doesn't have power, if she has gotten to the point that she needs a power of attorney, then somebody else needs to sign. So we can't make it public until they release I have the release form.
So they can.
The questions, we always send out questions and make those very available, but we also encourage people to ask their own questions.
Okay.
Over the next about 6 weeks, we're going to be developing a essentially a YouTube how to interview Rosie.
Okay.
But it is very individualistic. You know, if you get a woman who's, let's say, 105 years old, I swear the questions are different than if she's 93.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that my president, who's a principal of a school in Kentucky, is really good at is thinking back through the time that she was born, which would have been probably 1915 or whatever, and realizing that she saw the first car. You know, what was it like to see the first automobile?
Oh, yeah. So you don't think about those things when you're thinking about, yeah. When you think about the run-of-the-mill things, but
yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I will definitely make sure we put a link to your website so that people can, you know, find all the information and, you know, check and see what, you know, you have on there. I have to say, I love the position line that your movement has come up with. Will you share it with our listeners?
I'm not sure what it is. Which is it?
It's arm in arm.
Arm in arm. We move on. Yes, I'm so pleased. That just popped out of nowhere in the middle of the night one night in my mind. And I tried it with 5 or 6 people. We have wonderful advisors and volunteers and all that. And everybody liked it. So that's good.
Yeah.
But arm in arm. And of course, arm means American Rosie Movement. So put your arm in arm and let's move on. And
those good ideas come at 2 o'clock in the morning.
They do.
The scary thoughts come too at 2 o'clock in the morning.
When you're starting your REM sleep, when you've had your deep sleep and your transition to REM sleep, I think I get my best ideas then.
Yeah. Well, so we're almost out of time, but before we go, what would you like our listeners to know about you or the American Rosie Movement that I didn't ask?
I'm not sure. You've done a great job, seriously. Let me think. I think that this is a very positive project.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, our goal, the mission of our organization, which is called Thanks Plain and Simple, is to create projects that need to be done in America and do such a good job that the rest of the country joins in. And then the American Rosie Movement is a project under Thanks, Plain and Simple.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think most people get a little confused about is they get into the war thoughts and the fact that the women nurtured many, many injured men and all this sort of thing. And they lose sight of the fact that the whole project is to recognize the sorrows and the hard work, but also to be guided by the fact that we can do something that's bigger and be part of something that's bigger if we pull together. There's a quote that I love. It's Remy, 12th century, I think it's REMI, but I'm not sure. Let me think if I can remember. Oh, beyond who's right and beyond who's wrong, there is a field. Meet me there. And to me, what that means is we can argue with one another over political and other views all the time. But when it really comes down to it, we've got the freedom to pull together. And can we just meet someplace different? And, you know, there is a field, meet me there. And then you decide, what are you going to do in that field? Are you going to plant dogwood trees? Are you going to build a park? Are you going to create music, whatever? But it's fun. What I'm saying is it's really more positive than most people think. And that's my major worry, is that people see it as very, very serious.
Well, it's clear you have a drive and a passion for So what do you think your mother and grandmother would say about you and your promise? I guess it's about 77 years later.
Let's see, I'm 83, or I'm 83 this summer. My grandmother was a very forceful and egalitarian woman. And she would have said something different than my mother. My mother was very gentle and very artistic, almost, well, I would call her sophisticated. And I think my grandmother would just basically say, you know, what are you going to do next? She wouldn't compliment me. And my mother would put her arm around me and say, I'm so proud of you, you know, that sort of thing. But the women in my life have been very strong, but they've been very different. That's probably one reason I can slip in and out of different roles pretty quickly.
Wow. Yeah. I wish you the very best with the
idea. I really appreciate it, seriously. I appreciate the time with you, and I definitely see that you're interested.
Yeah, so I will put the links and some contact info below under the podcast so people can find you, and I'll look at your website. We'll be, of course, in touch, and any of your projects that you have press releases for or something, you can email and I will share them.
I will remember to do that. Thank you.
All right. So I wanted to wrap it up by reminding our listeners that this podcast has been brought to you by the Museum of the American Military Family and Learning Center in Tijeras, New Mexico. We're just east of Albuquerque, and the museum's podcasts are supported in part by New Mexico Arts, New Mexico Humanities Council, Sandia Area Credit Union, and organizations like Military Brats Seal and Military Brats Registry. And so I wanted to thank our guest today for coming, Ann Montague from the American Rosie Movement, ARM. And thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you for helping us educate and for being so very interested yourself. It is fascinating, isn't it?
It is. It truly is. I was having all sorts of concepts and ideas that I was going in my head saying, huh, we could do that. The music.
Yes, that's right. That's right. You can do it.
Arm in arm.
Arm in arm, we move on and we can do it, and we have the freedom to do it. If we don't use our freedom, then we waste our freedom.
Yeah.
It's what they fought for.
Well, thank you again, Anne.
Thank you. I sure appreciate it. Thank you so much.